Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we hear how China has done it again to world markets. An expert speaks with us about trying to bring peace to Libya. Our cyber guru considers two email-related events causing alarm in the United States.
That, I think, raises genuine concern for citizens, for journalists. You know, what exactly was deleted? And, now we just may never know.
And we'll hear about a quickly rising star's first album. It's here on The Voice of America. China has roiled the global financial markets by fractionally devaluating its currency for the second day in a row. Major market indices reacted by dropping. International Edition's Jeffrey Young is digging into this story to find out why China is taking this action, and I'm curious myself. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome.
Hi, Susan. I talked about this with Chatham House analyst Michelle Midan, who explained that this is not a simple devaluation for economic reasons. There are other motives for Beijing.
What Beijing is trying to do is allow its currency to float more freely, or to float in line with market movements and market expectations, rather than keep it very closely pegged to the U.S. dollar. The goal is to have the RMB, the Chinese currency, become a global reserve currency and included in the IMF special drawing rights. For that, it has to prove that it is willing to liberalize the currency.
Is this also a move by the leadership to stimulate internal production and hopefully greater number of jobs, etc.?
I mean, the fact that trade has come in very weak. Merchandise exports slumped on a U.S. dollar basis by 8.3% year-on-year in July. So that means that net exports can't support GDP growth in the coming months as much as it had over the first half of the year or in previous years. So certainly the fact that that the currency is depreciating will help the trade outlook. It's also, China has room to increase inflationary expectations as it is in deflationary mode right now. So it can afford to depreciate the currency in order to support economic growth. But we shouldn't read this as a move that is linked to the economic cycle. The economic cycle has facilitated this decision, but it is not the driver. Chinese leadership accepts the fact that it needs to change economic structure. It needs to move from an export-driven economic growth model, and one that relies very heavily on heavy industry, to one that is more consumption-driven, service-driven, but more importantly, to one where markets play, as the Communist Party itself has said, a more decisive role in allocating resources. This is what this move is about. What the central bank did on August 11th was to introduce a new fixing mechanism for the Chinese exchange rate. Part of that was a one-off depreciation because there have been market pressures on the RMB, downward pressure on the RMB, which is why it adjusted the exchange rate in order to align better to the market. But what the central bank is trying to do is change the mechanism for fixing the RMB exchange rate.
If the currency is devalued, isn't that going to make the extractive process and the intake of feedstock more expensive? And will there be a reflection in the manufacturing costs because of that?
It will certainly raise the cost of commodities and imports. Now, we also have to bear in mind that commodities, for example, oil has gone from $100 a barrel to over $100 a barrel to $50 or $60 a barrel to $50 a barrel these days. So even with a currency devaluation or a 2% or 3%, even a 5% increase in the cost of commodities and the cost of oil, that still pales in comparison to the cost reduction over the past year. That's one thing. But more importantly, it does raise some of the cost for manufacturers and the cost of inputs, with commodity prices being slightly higher.
That was Michelle Midan, an analyst with the research organization Chatham House in London.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you, do you think that China's goal to become a global reserve currency is pretty ambitious?
Well, yes, it is, Susan. But China wants this to further prove that it is indeed a global power.
Thanks so much, Jeff, for stopping by as always.
Thank you, Susan.
China's currency move isn't just affecting financial markets. It's having an impact on social media, too. And my colleague Michael Lippin is here in the studio to explain all that. Michael, what's the impact so far?
Hi, Susan. Well, we've been hearing about how China wants to boost the yuan's profile, and that's exactly what's happening on Twitter. The Topsy Analytics website shows that hashtag yuan has been tweeted 9,000 times in the last 24 hours. That's the most daily tweets in the past month. So Twitter users are paying attention to the Chinese currency and even having a little fun with it. American author Jim Rickards is one of them. He wrote the New York Times bestseller The Death of Money and goes by the handle @JamesGRickards. This is what he tweeted today to his 55,000 followers. A photo of Chinese President Xi Jinping alongside U.S. pop star Britney Spears.
Whoa.
And this was his message. China is taking the Britney Spears approach to devaluation. Oops, I did it again.
That's good.
All right, now many of our listeners might recognize that that's a reference to Britney Spears' first big hit song from 2000.
That is a sense of humor. Is there some more serious commentary, however, about the devaluation?
Well, yes, there is, of course. And U.S. economist Steve Hanke of Johns Hopkins University tweeted about it today. He wrote that if Chinese officials let the yuan depreciate further, these economies will slump even more. And then he added a link to a Bloomberg News report by Lillian Kerenengun. In that article, Kerenengun wrote that China's surprise devaluation of the yuan couldn't have come at a worse time for some Asian currencies. She said that a measure of Asia's 10 most traded currencies, excluding the Japanese yen, is expected to weaken for a third straight year. And then the article quotes a Singapore analyst as saying that will trigger a vicious cycle of different countries trying to depreciate their currencies. And you know what? That's also known as a currency war. In fact, the hashtag currency wars is starting to get more usage on Twitter, with more than 400 mentions in the past day. But all is not lost, because Chinese state-run newspaper People's Daily tweeted another message from the Chinese central bank today. Its handle @PDChina highlighted an article quoting the central bank as saying, there's no reason for the yuan to depreciate further. We'll just have to see. Susan?
Okay, well, thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A newly updated index of sunspot numbers over the last 400 years may have eliminated a key argument used by those who question human-caused climate change. Some of those who suggest that climate change is not anthropogenic in nature contend that changes in the sun's activity are responsible for any increase or decrease in global temperatures. The new sunspot index, called the Sunspot Number Version 2.0, shows that solar activity has been constant over the past few centuries without any noteworthy long-term upward trends in solar activity since 1700. Creators of the new sunspot index say this means that any rise in global temperatures since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution cannot be attributed to an increase in solar activity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
UN Special Envoy to Libya urged the country's warring factions to agree on a national unity government by the end of this month. UN Envoy Bernardino Leon said the participation of all members of the warring factions in the renewed talks in Geneva represents a good sign that an accord can be reached in the next 3 weeks. Some parties to the conflict initialed a peace agreement on July 11th. Leon said he would build on this achievement by focusing on persuading the holdouts to sign on to the unity government accord during this round of talks. That deal was boycotted by the Islamist-aligned General National Congress, GNC, which was installed in Tripoli by a powerful militia alliance that seized the capital last year. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke to Bill Lawrence, director of Middle East and North Africa programs, at the Center for Islam and Democracy about challenges and prospects of reaching a compromise in Libya. Say, Mohammed, thank you. Welcome to the studio here.
Thank you.
I say, what are the sticking points that are hindering the transition in Libya?
Well, so the General National Conference, GNC, in Tripoli did not sign and insisted that there will be no agreement if General Haftar, who led the military campaign against Islamists in Benghazi, continues to be the leader of the Libyan army. But this is not the only problem, as Bill Lawrence explains.
There's about 8 or 10 major areas of disagreement the role of the presidency, the organization of the prime ministership, the role of the new state council, which is the second legislative body. There's a lot of big issues that need to be discussed, but it is true that including or excluding Haftar is a major issue.
Even if GNC signed that agreement, there may be a disconnect between the negotiators and those armed groups who are doing the fighting. Is that a fair assessment?
No, Sue. That's why there is no need to have separate negotiations to end the bloodshed in Libya. And according to Bill Lawrence, reaching the main political deal would pave the way for handling a wide array of issues. However, if a compromise is reached, there will be a need for a peacekeeping force to protect national infrastructure and institutions and supervise the disarming of the Libyan militias until an effective national army and police force can be formed and deployed. Bill Lawrence said Libya will need up to 10 years to organize its own security forces.
Europe and the United States tried to have what they called local Libyan ownership of the whole process here, but Libya wasn't up to the standard. They didn't have the institutions. They didn't have what they needed to make this work. And so now what everyone's talking about is targeted assistance. So, you know, outside special forces, outside peacekeepers in certain very specific areas could be part of the mix.
To sum it up, Bill Lawrence envisions different possible scenarios for Libya.
Right now, the most likely is this political stasis and never-ending negotiation coupled by conflict. Even if we get the big political deal between East and West, between Tobruk and Tripoli, you have ISIS, you have Al-Qaeda, who still dominate in certain pockets, and that's going to go on for some time as well. So there's no perfect scenario that's, for Libya that's likely. I think it's just a question of whether you have more violence or less violence, and more local peace deals or less local peace deals.
Well, thank you, Mohammed, for that report.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, two U.S. email stirs in 1 week, and the first album for Charlie Puth. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry caused a stir Tuesday when he said in a TV interview that it was very likely that some of his emails while in office had been read by Chinese and Russian operatives. Admission comes on the heels of another email controversy, namely Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton's handling of her emails while she served as Secretary of State. This week, she turned her private email server over to the Justice Department, which is exploring the security measures she employed. International Edition cyber correspondent Doug Bernard is here in the studio with me. And Doug, usually when you come visit me, we're joking and teasing right. and having a good... Well, this is a pretty serious thing.
These are very serious things. So first to Secretary Kerry. He caused a bit of a stir, as you say, when he admitted, I think frankly, that he felt that it was, as you say, very likely that either Russian or Chinese operatives, or maybe both, had read some of his emails. He went on to say, it's very possible I certainly write things with that awareness. And, of course, this is coming in the wake of any number of revelations about hacks of email systems and other government computer systems at the White House, the State Department, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and others. So I think that this is, frankly, an honest evaluation, and that government officials, especially those as you sort of move up the ranks in terms of position and power, they're aware that their email is just not as secure as they'd like it, and they're kind of conducting their correspondence that way.
Well, I was wondering, you can't talk on the phone because
right.
those can be tapped.
Yes.
Your email can be tapped.
Right.
Even letters, handwritten letters, can be intercepted. Is there any way that these big authorities can communicate with their staff and whatnot and not be listened to?
Passenger pigeon, perhaps?
Oh.
No, honestly, phone lines can be secured. Emails can be sent and documents sent back and forth in a secure way. They can be encrypted. They can be routed through special servers. The problem is that people just often don't do it. So there are things that can be done, and you can guarantee that when the President of the United States is conducting digital correspondence with generals or other people, that that is very secure. But in the day-to-day operations of government, increasingly people, they just don't take the protections that they probably should.
Well, let's move on over to Hillary Clinton and what's going on there.
Sure. So when she was Secretary of State, she did something a little unusual, which was rather than routing all her email traffic through State Department servers, she had a private one put in her Chappaqua home. And that was used both for her official correspondence as Secretary of State and also her personal correspondence. Well, when that revelation came out that she was doing that, there was a lot of concern that was raised, among other things. She could possibly be deleting official government correspondence. All of that has to be protected.
Yes, it's a law, actually, isn't it?
It's absolutely a law. And government officials are briefed on that. Also, you know, the security measures that she did or didn't put in place for this server. So this week she's turned over that private email server to federal authorities. And inspectors have announced, the Inspector General for the Intelligence Community announced that there were four emails that were classified that were found on those servers, two of them that were classified top secret, which is the highest, just about the highest level you can get. The controversy is whether they were actually classified at the time that they were sent or later reclassified, you know, after they had been sent.
Well, as we mentioned, she is running for president. How much of this is political and how much of it is actually an issue?
Right. We're in the season where everything is going to be seen through a political lens, and that's going to be true right up through next November and Election Day. But I think that this is a legitimate concern. Now, that doesn't mean that some won't try to politicize it, but the use of a private server outside of the normal sort of protections and bounds that the government creates or wraps its servers in, I think raises serious questions. And also that other question, if she's the one in control of the server, she's the one who can delete things, and she and her office has done that. And that, I think, raises genuine concern for citizens, for journalists. You know, well, what exactly was deleted? And, you know, well, now we just may never know.
We may never know.
That's right.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's nice to see you.
Great to see you.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Soybean oil is one of the most widely consumed cooking oils. But new research from the University of California, Riverside suggests that a diet high in soybean oil causes more obesity than a diet high in fructose.
Most people think that one of the major contributors to the obesity epidemic is fructose.
But researcher Poonam Jotdeol says that in an experiment with mice, those mice on a high soybean oil diet gained twice as much weight as those that consumed the equivalent of fructose.
Soybean oil is found in almost all the processed foods.
The California researchers say that in addition to weight gain, the soybean oil consuming mice showed evidence of metabolic syndrome, a cluster of conditions that increase the risk of heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Charlie Puth first gained international fame through the internet and his YouTube videos. Then his song, See You Again, was number one for weeks. Now he is about to release his first album and has a new duet with Meghan Trainor, Marvin Gaye. International Edition's David Byrd and VOA's Larry London spoke about the song and about some health problems Meghan is having.
First, she had a hit duet with John Legend. Now Meghan Trainor is back with Charlie Puth, a tribute song, Marvin Gaye. Larry, tell me about this song.
It's a great song, and it's actually Charlie Puth's first solo release from his upcoming album, which is called Some Type of Love. It's an EP that is his first album ever. He's been a social media phenom. Back in 2009, he started putting stuff on YouTube and got very, very popular that way. And now he's got his own record. Of course, you know him from the number one hit See You Again, which spent 12 weeks at number one from the film Furious 7. It was a duet with Wiz Khalifa featuring Charlie Puth. Now we've got Charlie Puth featuring Meghan Trainor with Marvin Gaye.
Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on. You got the healing that I want. Just like they say from the song. Till the dawn, let's Marvin Gaye and get it on.
But if you want to hear Meghan, I understand you might want to listen to this record because she's having some vocal problems again?
Yeah, again, this seems to be a reoccurring issue with a lot of different singers. She canceled a number of shows several months ago, resumed the tour. Unfortunately, as of today she has postponed her tour again because of throat problems.
Now, is this going to require surgery, or do we know that yet?
Not known yet. It might. Like Sam Smith had a vocal hemorrhage on one of his vocal cords, and he underwent surgery and spent 2 months in rehab, so maybe Meghan Trainor will have to undergo the same situation. Who knows? A lot of these singers have throat problems. She's only 20, and her throat is not used to this kind of wear and tear because she's a songwriter, remember. That's how she came up through the ranks.
Yeah, she's not used to being in front of, you know, thousands of people putting on a show, because that can take its toll. I know that there's several high-profile country artists that Nikki Strong and I talked about who had the same problem. It's either a node or it's a like a callus on mm-hmm. their vocal cords, or the blood vessels rupture, like Sam Smith. And that's nothing to be played with. You can literally lose your voice or do permanent damage to your vocal cords if you don't get that taken care of.
It's one of the hazards of the business that they're in, because when you have a popular song, you have to be out promoting it. And when it's popular on the charts, everybody wants you to perform it on their talk shows and in concerts and whatnot. So she probably, on average, I would guess any singer, sings a song when it's popular 3-4 times a day.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because one of my guitar heroes, James Taylor, said that Tony Bennett asked him, are you still doing your vocal exercises? And he said, no, not really. And Tony, who is now like 86 or 87 and still performing, said, no, you got to do that every day. You got to make sure you do that or you'll lose the voice.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Maybe I need to get that book.
Really? All right. Well, you know, if you have a comment about this, you can send Larry a tweet. He's at @VOA_music. Also, look for his show, Border Crossings. You can find that on our website, www.voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website, voanews.com, and go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner. Then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIL is continuing its assault on innocent civilians with its latest kidnappings in the central Syrian province of Homs, where the terrorist group abducted an estimated 230 people, including some Christians. ISIL's attacks have also resulted in the displacement of an estimated 2,000 people from nearby villages. According to the State Department's 2014 Human Rights Report, some communities under rule by ISIL experience specialized religious taxes, or jizya, forced religious conversions, destruction of religious sites, and expulsion of minority communities. Christians make up 10% of Syria's population of more than 17 million people. In February, ISIL attacked predominantly Assyrian Christian villages in the northeast Syrian province of Hasaka, where they kidnapped dozens of civilians, including women, children, priests, and the elderly. ISIL also burned and destroyed homes and churches. Those attacks displaced an estimated 3,000 people. The fact that ISIL deliberately targets civilians further testifies to its rampant criminality and brutality against all those who disagree with its toxic beliefs. ISIL continues to exact its evil upon innocents of all faiths, and the majority of its victims have been Muslim. People of all faiths and many religious leaders throughout the region have united in condemning ISIL's depravity, its mass killings, rape, sexual enslavement, lashing, stoning, crucifixion, and public murder of hostages. The violence in Syria has killed more than 250,000 people. The United States demands an immediate and unconditional release of all civilians taken captive by ISIL. To help bring an end to these horrors, the United States remains committed to leading the global coalition to counter ISIL.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.